It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The Biden administration wants to establish new medical residency programs in rural areas. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services awarded $11 million to 15 organizations around the country.
One is UW-Madison for its Obstetrics and Gynecology Rural Track Program. We'll learn more about the federal government's goals.
First, how to lower costs for prescription drugs. Under the Inflation Reduction Act, insulin costs are capped for Americans on Medicare. Negotiations are underway for other drugs.
Andrea Palm joins us, Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Palm served as Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services from 2019 to 2021. Deputy Secretary Palm, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you. It's nice to be home.
Drug prices in our country much higher than in other nations. And there's this new report from the Federal Trade Commission saying that pharmacy benefit managers are inflating drug costs and pharmacies making less and less. How is your agency working on this issue of the rising cost of medicine?
It's such a critical one, Kate, and I'm really happy to have an opportunity to spend a little time making sure folks know about the benefits that are already in effect to reduce their costs and sort of what's on the horizon for us. I think for starters, I want to make sure that folks know that the $35 insulin cap is already in place for Medicare enrollees, and that's saving about $628 a year for Wisconsinites already, a really important cost savings for folks who use insulin. And the other, I think, really important cost-saving benefit that I want to highlight for Wisconsinites is the out-of-pocket cap on prescription drugs through the Medicare program. Mm-hmm. It's about $3,500 this year. Starting in January, it'll go down to $2,000 a year. But that's has already saved 234,000 Wisconsinites about $66 million. And so we're really proud here in the Biden-Harris administration for the progress we're making in this space, recognizing that, to your point, folks are relying on these medications. Often they take more than one. And so anything we can do to tangibly reduce those costs so that they have that money in their pockets for other necessities, other expenses of life is a really important thing that we here at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services can be working on. I think you mentioned specifically, Kate, PBMs. And I will tell you, through this administration, through the president's executive order on competition, we're working on some of these middlemen issues in the transparency space, in other ways to make sure that we're doing everything we can within the four walls of HHS, but also in partnership with FTC, with DOJ, with other parts of the federal government to make sure that healthcare costs are as transparent and as affordable as possible.
I wonder as well, you know, capping the costs of these, you know, really expensive, you know, cancer medications or heart medications, kidney medications, Will there be some drug price relief in the future coming to the millions of Americans who are not covered through Medicare?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question and right, the sort of the next horizon. It is absolutely the goal and the desire of this president and this administration to extend those cost savings beyond the Medicare program. The law specifically gave us authority in the Medicare space, and it was, right, 10 drugs this first period of negotiation. We'll add another 15 drugs in 2025, and we'll continue to build from there. But I think we've got to walk and chew gum on Medicare and adding and expanding to reduce costs across the board, to your point.
What drugs are in negotiation? Can you give some examples here of what is being worked on with drug companies?
In the spring of 23, announced the first 10 drugs, and right, it's diabetes drugs, it's cancer drugs, it's drugs to prevent stroke, and the list particularly are the drugs Eliquis, Jardiance, Xarelto, Januvia, Farxiga, Entresto, Enbrel, and Imbruvica, and Stelara is also on the list, as is Fiasp. So it's 10 drugs that, like, I think we all could probably sing the jingles from their commercials, right? They are well-known, highly utilized, expensive products for seniors. Many of them are using multiples on the list. And so we're very excited to bring these cost savings to seniors here in the very near future.
Turning to a new topic here, your agency spent $11 million to help expand U.S. rural medical residency programs. UW-Madison benefiting as a recipient for its OBGYN Rural Track program. What are your goals for physicians in rural areas?
Yeah, and I would just, Kate, if I could, double down on the UW program. It will be the first in the nation on this point, right? So a really important way that we are thinking about making sure that we are doing all that we can to extend residency programs, healthcare provider training programs into rural areas. Because what we know about our experience with programs like this is that if people practice in communities, they're more likely to stay there. And so extending these programs, moving them out to more parts of the country, including rural parts of this country, is really going to help us expand the workforce in places where we really need it, right? People go to these communities, they fall in love, and they never leave. And that's really good for our ability to make sure that our rural residents have access to the healthcare that they need. And so programs like the one you've highlighted and others that we have pushed out through the course of this administration are really important investments in the long-term health of rural communities.
I think it can be difficult, though, for some future physicians who are looking at what they could earn in an urban community, an urban hospital, clinic, versus what they could do in a rural setting. Is pay an issue?
Yeah, and I think it's one of the reasons why our loan repayment programs, and particularly our rural loan repayment program, are trying to reduce those barriers. And obviously, to your point, lifetime earnings is a different question than feeling the pressure to pay back your loan in the more near term. But we think that kind of investment in providers who are willing to take a flyer on communities outside of urban and suburban areas is an important carrot to helping us get to a place where, again, you're interested in the loan repayment program, you go to a community, you fall in love, and we hope that you stay.
Andrea Palm with us, Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, as we talk about federal healthcare policies, new investments. Hospital closures, Western Wisconsin, you know, earlier this year, we experienced two hospital closures on top of a network of clinics that were closed and really left residents struggling to find healthcare providers. What could the federal government do about this issue as you saw this unfolding?
It is, and I certainly learned this firsthand in my time in Wisconsin, the margins that rural hospitals struggle under are small. And any reduction in predictability, any change in the local economy that alters the mix of people, all of those things, they're just so close to the edge that it all matters to their ability to keep their doors open. And I think one of the important things we have done during this administration in partnership with Congress was this rural emergency hospital designation. And it allows us through CMS to invest in rural emergency hospitals in a way that helps keep doors open. It is an option that hospitals are starting to take up in rural communities to allow there to be some amount of access and not risking the same kind of hospital closures that we're seeing. I think we are also interested in understanding how we think about the other things that influence the cost of doing business, things like cybersecurity and other ways in which we can invest in hospital infrastructure that takes some of the pressure off the cost of doing healthcare business that is particularly burdensome in rural communities. And so we have a budget proposal to help under-resourced hospitals, again, on the cyber front, to try to take that pressure off of them so that they can do what they need to do to provide healthcare.
Before we have to let you go, You led Wisconsin's health department during some really dark days of the COVID pandemic before vaccines were on the horizon. What can you apply to your job today from that time in Wisconsin?
That's a great question, Kate. I will say, having run our response in the state of Wisconsin, the lessons that I learned about the ways in which people show up in times of crisis, and how we think how that helps us think differently about the work that we do and the partnerships we need to be successful, is really important to how we do business regularly, right? Mm-hmm. If we could do big things, important things, really critical things in that moment, we ought to be challenging ourselves to do work in that way outside of times of emergency. So the new pathways, the new partnerships, the new muscle we built in different ways during that time are things that I have tried to focus on here in this job to maintain, to continue to build, to work, to make those part of the way we serve the American people, whether that's in the state of Wisconsin or more nationally. Mm. And right, concretely, that's things like the way in which we needed to be connected to social and human services in the healthcare sector. Those are gaps that exist whether you're in an emergency or not. And so how that changes and challenges us to do the work better, I think are really important things that I have tried to carry from my experience in Wisconsin.
Deputy Secretary Palm, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kay. It's great to talk to you.
Andrea Palm is Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Palm most recently served as Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.